story. But I love you. Turn the bell.
Supernatural and the supernormal, dramatizing the fantasies and the terrors of the unknown. We tell you this frankly, though if you wish to avoid the excitement and tension of these imaginative plays, we urge you to open the ceiling. Turn off your radio now.
Welcome back to The Horror. Thanks for joining me again this Saturday. For more old-time radio horror stories, this week we'll begin with The Haunting Hour, a series that aired in the mid to late 1940s. The episode we'll hear is No Escape. I don't have an air date for that one. After that, we'll hear a little bonus episode from The Black Chapel, a series that aired apparently in the late 1930s. Not sure how long this one ran. It did run on CBS. The episode we'll hear today is titled The Mahogany Coffin. This one's from June of 1939. First, here's The Haunting Hour. No Escape.
Imagination is free and moves forward swiftly, silently. This is The Haunting Hour. Imagination enters into the planning of the supposedly perfect murder. Considerable imagination is used so that time, place, alibi, and evidence are dealt with conclusively. Yet the most important piece of evidence that can expose the murderer and his crime is most often left intact. His imagination. His mind. April evening. Paul Perry in his penthouse apartment overlooking a backyard of rubbish and the East River. He's very busy tonight, planning murder. Simple murder. First, he prepares his prop. A chair is in the way. An end table obscures the path just a little. And that floor lamp might be turned over and broken in his rush to the window. That's right. The window. The window through which Paul Perry will fling his wife and watch her plunge 16 floors to the yard below. Simple and final murder. The stage has been set. But first, there is a witness to dispose of.
Excuse me, Mr. Perry. But what should I do about Mrs. Perry's dinner? It's getting cold.
Never mind, Hannah. Mrs. Perry is probably eating out.
Yes, sir. Will there be anything else, Mr. Perry?
No. No, I don't think so. As soon as you finish your work, Hannah, you can take the evening off. The stage has been set. But Mrs. Perry is working to foil her own murder. Wearing her gray coat and a red pork pie hat, Mrs. Perry left her penthouse apartment in the afternoon. Now it is after 8 o'clock. And where is Mrs. Perry?
Fourth precinct. Precinct Homicide, Lieutenant Dugan speaking. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
My name is Joan Perry. Mrs. Joan Perry. And I want you to protect me from my husband.
Hold everything, lady. You're in the wrong division. This is homicide.
I know. My husband is planning to murder me.
How do you know?
I know.
Has he threatened you?
No.
Have you any evidence of his planning to murder you?
No.
Well, I give up. Why does he want to murder you?
Because I won't give him a divorce. Well, you've got to protect me. He's going to kill me. I know, I tell you, I know.
Has he hit you or beaten you at any time?
Oh, no.
Are there any grounds on which we can issue a warrant for his arrest?
I don't want him arrested. Then he'll suspect that I know.
Then what do you want from me?
I want you to protect me.
Well, lady, you're in the wrong place. What you need is a private bodyguard. Excuse me. Fourth Precinct, Homicide, Lieutenant Dugan speaking. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hold it. Mrs. Perry! I'll call you back in a minute. Mrs. Perry! Give me the front desk. Hey, Joe, a lady wearing a gray coat and a red hat is leaving the building. Stop her. Oh. No, never mind.
Something's wrong with the switch. The lights don't go on. All. All. Hannah. Is anybody... Perry.
Good morning, Hannah. Well, you needn't bother with a setting for Mrs. Perry. She called last night to say that she was staying at her mother's for a few days.
Yes, sir.
Well, what's on the menu this morning?
Orange juice, eggs and sausages, cake and coffee.
Great. I'm hungry.
I'll get it, Mr. Perry. A delivery boy from the cleaners to pick up Mrs. Perry's clothes.
It's the... what?
The delivery boy from Mrs. Perry's clothes.
Tell the boy to come in here.
Oh, you want the delivery boy in here?
Yes, bring him in.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, Mr. Perry.
Shouldn't have jumped down Hannah's throat like that. It's probably some mistake.
What's cooking, mister?
You're here for Mrs. Perry's clothes?
You got it the first time.
Well, when did she give you the order?
She was in the store first thing this morning.
She came into your store this morning?
That's right. And what is this, the third degree?
Huh? Oh, no. No. You see, Mrs. Perry is staying at her mother's for a few days, and this sounds like a practical joke. Can you describe her?
No. She's kind of neat looking, and she was wearing a gray coat with a red hat, if you call that a hat.
That's Joan. But last night...
Look, do I get the clothes or don't I?
Oh, you'd better come back some other time.
Why don't you say so to Vice Place? I haven't got all day to hang around.
Maybe she's all right. Maybe she didn't get hurt. Oh, that's ridiculous. 16 stories down to the yard and no ledges to land on while falling. But I'd better make certain. No. No, it's a clean drop down to the yard. Can't see her from here with this fog. Maybe she's not there. But she's got to be. She's got to. I should go down to see for myself. Can't see her. But she's here someplace. You just don't get up and walk away after you fall 16 floors. You don't. No, you don't. Maybe behind this box. No. No, she's not here. She's not here. Joan! Joan, where are you? Why are you hiding? Better watch it. I'm starting to act like a lunatic. There must be a logical explanation to all this. Maybe she fell into the river. Yes. Yes, that's it. She fell into the river and was swept away with the current. Then was in the tailor shop this morning.
Yes, Hannah? What is it?
There's a man here to see Mrs. Perry.
Well, did you tell him she's away for a few days?
He says that Mrs. Perry made an appointment to see him here.
Where is he?
In the foyer.
All right, tell him I'll see him.
Yes, sir.
How do you do, Mr. Perry? Harvey's my name. Hope I'm not disturbing you. But your wife made an appointment this morning to see me today at 2:30, and here it is, 2:30. Right on the button. Always cross. That's me. It inspires confidence.
You saw my wife this morning?
Just missed her by a few minutes. I get to my office at 10 every morning, right on the button. Always prompt, but yes, I was a little late this morning.
Well, then, with whom did she make that appointment?
My secretary took care of the details. She opens the office every morning. A very efficient young lady, Miss Shepherd is. Yes, sir, very efficient.
Mr. Harvey, I think your secretary made a mistake.
What do you mean?
Well, you see, my wife couldn't have been in your office this morning because she's with her mother in the country since last night. Must be two other people.
My gosh, this is something, isn't it? I wonder how Miss Shepherd made such a mistake. She's very efficient. Mind if I use your phone? I'd like to call my office.
Help yourself.
Thank you. I'm sorry to be such a nuisance. Hello? Shepherd? Harvey speaking. I'm checking on that 2:30 appointment you arranged for me this morning. There seems to be some misunderstanding. Yes? Yes, Mrs. Perry. And the address? My gosh, that's right. Just a moment. Well, Mr. Perry, my secretary just confirmed this meeting. She herself spoke to your wife this morning.
Ask her to describe Mrs. Perry.
Well, Miss Shepherd, what did this Mrs. Perry look like? Yes, young, good-looking, wearing a gray coat and a red hat. Just a moment. Anything else, Mr. Perry?
No.
That's all, Miss Shepherd. I'll be back at the office within the hour. Goodbye.
Oh, I'm calling my wife at dinner time, and I'll ask her about it. Sorry that you had to come here on a wild goose chase.
Oh, it's all in the day's work. Well, by the way, if you should ever want to get in touch with me, here's my card. Good day.
Frank Harvey. Broker. Life insurance. Accident insurance. Mimi, darling.
I was wondering when you'd call. What time are you coming over?
About 7. Mimi.
Yes?
Do you know a man by the name of Frank Harvey?
No. Should I?
I don't know.
Is anything wrong?
Wrong? I know there's nothing wrong, but it's a little late for April Fool's Day.
Are you sure you're all right? You sound as if this fog is getting you.
The fog? Yeah. Yeah, that's it. See you at 7.
I'll be waiting.
She said the fog is getting me. The fog. Maybe it is. Hello?
I'd like to speak with Mr. Paul Perry.
Speaking.
My name is Baxter. I'm the credit manager at the Mapleton Department Store.
Very interesting.
There's a Mrs. Perry here, and she wants to open a charge account with us. She
tells the who?
Mrs. Perry. Mrs. Jones Perry.
And she's in the store now?
Why, certainly.
What does she look like?
I beg your pardon?
Describe her. What's she wearing?
Just a moment. She's wearing a gray coat and a red hat.
Keep her there. Don't let her get away. I'll be right over.
Decided to do away with his wife, Joan, in order to marry Mimi Foster. He hit his wife over the head and threw her out of the window to the backyard, 16 stories below. But, strangely, the next day, there were indications she might not have been killed despite her fall. First, her body was not to be found when Paul went to the yard to look for it. Then, several people told him they had spoken with his wife that very day. And finally, when Mr. Baxter, the credit manager of the Mapleton department store, called him to say Mrs. Perry was in his office to open a charge account, Paul frantically told him to keep her there.
Which way to the credit manager's office?
Take an aisle on you, Matt. Yes?
Well, where is she?
Where is who?
My wife, Joan Perry. You called and said she was here. Well, where is she?
I'm sure I don't know.
Someone called me a few minutes ago, said his name was Baxter. Is your name Baxter?
Yes. I didn't call you.
It's a trap. That's what it is. A trap. And I walked right into it. But who wanted to trap me? Who? That man on the phone said his name was Baxter. It wasn't Baxter. But whoever he is, he can't know anything. Maybe I didn't get a phone call from Baxter. Maybe I'm just letting my imagination run away with me. Yes. Yes, that's it. No one called. No one.
It's a delivery boy from the cleaners to pick up Mrs. Perry's clothes.
Not gonna get the clothes, or don't I? Not my name, your wife, Mrs. Parker. Oh, it's not.
Please. Stop it! Stop it! I've got to get hold of myself. I can't get myself away from Mimi.
Hello, darling.
Sorry I'm late, Mimi.
I suppose you had the usual trouble trying to get away from your wife.
She's not home. Mimi. Mimi, let's go away. Far away, someplace where no one will know us, where no one will bother us.
It wouldn't be right.
Okay, then forget it. Forget it for now, anyway. Come on, let's get going.
All right, darling. I'll be ready in a minute.
Hope the fog lets up soon. Might as well be in London.
How do you like it? How do you like my new hat?
Where did you get it?
I just bought it today.
Take it off.
Take it off? Why? I like it.
I said take it off. It's Joan's hat.
Why must everything remind you of Joan?
Take it off!
All right. I'll take it off.
I'm sorry. It's just that I hate her so.
I know.
Darling, let's not stay here all night gabbing about her. We're going out to have fun.
Yes. Yes, we're going out to have fun.
All right, then. Let's go.
Where to?
Haven't you heard? The circus is in town. I'm glad. Darling, we'll always have fun.
Oh, dear. Why did you ask?
Nothing or nobody will stand in our way.
Now, stop being morbid. Come on, I want to see the sideshows.
Hello, Mimi.
What? Frank, how are you? Oh, I almost forgot. Frank, this is Paul Perry.
Oh, it's all right, Mimi. I've already met Mr. Harvey.
Harvey? Paul, this is Frank Dugan.
I don't know by what name you know him, but he was at my house this afternoon as Mr. Harvey. Oh, by the way, Mr. Harvey, did you sell many insurance policies today?
Well, Paul, a joke, a joke.
Just a minute, Mimi.
I'm afraid, my friend, that you're confusing me with someone else. I've never seen you before in my life, and my name isn't Harvey.
Well, that's the way you want it. Pleased to meet you, Mr. Dugan.
Same here. Well, I have to look for my friend.
Call me, Frank, when you get a free moment.
I will, Mimi. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Frank. Now, Paul, what was all this nonsense about some insurance?
Well, I tell you, Mimi, that man came to see Joan this afternoon about some insurance.
Either you're drunk or you're imagining things. And I haven't seen you take a drink in the last few hours.
That Dugan or Harvey even gave me his business card.
So what?
So what? That card said Frank Harvey, broker, life insurance, accident insurance.
Harvey may have given you such a card, but I'm certain that Frank Dugan didn't.
What makes you so certain that Dugan and Harvey aren't one and the same person?
Because Frank Dugan happens to be a police lieutenant with the homicide squad. You've been acting strangely all evening.
Strangely? Please, darling, don't nag.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's just that I'm worried.
What about?
You silly.
There's nothing to worry about.
I hope you're right.
Maybe I'm imagining things. Maybe I never saw Harvey. But he gave me that business card. At least I think he did. That card. I've got to get rid of Mimi. I've got to get home and find that car.
Thanks for taking me home, darling.
I'll call you in the morning.
You're so abrupt. It's as if you're anxious to get rid of me.
I've got to get home. Good night, Mimi. Here it is, all right. Now to find the house. 75 Johnson Place.
Hello. Has Lieutenant Dukin come in yet?
In 15 minutes.
Well, please tell him that Mimi Foster called. I think that something's happened to Mr. Paul Perry. Will you tell him to meet me at Mr. Perry's apartment on East 73rd Street the moment he comes in? Thank you. Goodbye.
Make it worth your while if you'll tell me where Johnson Place is.
Well, this is Johnson Place. What number?
75.
Yeah. That's right along here. Come on, I'll show you, mister. That is 67, 71. And there's an empty lot. Yeah. And this right here,
79. There is no 75.
Maybe it's on the other side of the street.
No, there's nothing on the other side of the street. Empty spaces, only empty spaces.
Hello, Paul.
What are you doing here? In front of my door.
I was worried, and when I called and there was no answer, I came right over. I didn't phone from the lobby. I came right up in the elevator. I was just ringing your doorbell. Where were you?
I just stepped out for a pack of cigarettes. Come in. Sit down.
Paul?
Yes.
What's eating you?
Nothing. I feel great.
But before, at the circus,
I took a walk and the fog cleared my head. Sit down. I'll get you a drink. You look as if you could do one. Out for the evening. But tonight I have a new leading lady. Well, what shall we drink to?
Let's toast your quick divorce and our happy marriage.
Very nicely put. And I drink to you, my sweet little double-crossing wench. You dropped your drink, my
dear. I'm going home. You're drunk.
You're not going home. Sit down.
What do you want?
This is goodbye.
Well, that suits me fine. Goodbye.
Sit down. You don't understand. This is goodbye. Just fade out.
No. No.
Dugan can't help you now. Nobody can. Nobody helped Joan last night.
Joan?
Where were you watching from when she went out the window?
Oh!
Go on. Go on, yell your head off. You'll never be hurt about those river noises.
Paul, I don't want to die.
Oh, it doesn't hurt. Joan, she'll tell you. It's as easy as falling off a log. Only this way, it's falling out the window. And you've got a farewell symphony. Beautiful.
Why do you want to kill me?
Because you're the only witness.
No.
Because you're trying to throw me over to Dugan.
No.
Because you're going to turn me in so that I can't stand in your way.
No.
Because I killed for you in the first place.
No, that's not true. I didn't didn't know about Joan until you told me, and I love you, you poor fool. I love you.
You lie. I don't believe
it. It's the truth.
You think you can trick me again like you've been doing all day?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Just for the cleanest, dressing up as Joan, then getting Dugan to pose as a phony insurance salesman.
No, tonight at the circus was the first time I've seen Frank in a month.
Ah, it's a shame. You would have made a great act.
You've got to believe me. I'm telling the truth. No. No, please. Please. Paul. No.
Got here at
the
time.
Frank. Frank, you suddenly went crazy.
No, he didn't. He's as sane as you are, Mimi. Wait till I put the cuffs on him.
I'm not dead.
No. No, I'm not dead. Well, that'll keep you, Barry. You're under arrest.
I'll sue the state for this.
Oh, no, you won't. Murder is a tough rap to beat.
You're crazy. You can't prove murder without the corpus delicti.
Mrs. Perry, or what there's left of her, is on a slab at the morgue. I was too late last night.
But she jumped.
Just as Mimi almost jumped. No good, Perry. Besides, I heard your confession.
Frank, how did you know?
We expected this second attempted murder. We couldn't prevent the first, but you weren't in any danger, Mimi. We knew exactly what he would do, step by step. We planned it so.
What do you mean?
We knew he killed his wife, but we needed a confession. So we worked on the only part of him we knew would be vulnerable. His mind. No matter how well planned a murder may be, the murderer can't escape himself. No matter how you look at it, there's no escape.
From shadows and stillness, mystery weaves a spell of strangest fascination, charging the mind with doubt and fear. For mystery is a strange companion, a living memory in the haunting hour.
It is a quarter of an hour until midnight. Time for us to go to the Black Chapel. Each Friday evening, we come to this remote spot, a place of mystery and terror, where a gaunt-footed figure appears and sits at the keyboard of the ruined old organ, mumbling and gibbering his fantastic tales as his talon hands grip the crack.
Little do they know. Little does anyone know. About the mahogany coffin. Yes. The mahogany coffin. Maybe you'll want one like it. Yes. Maybe you'll want your coffin to be just like it. So soft and peaceful. Just the thing for a good night's sleep. Listen. You hear the wind? It was just such a night. An old pilot figure died, with only the wind to mourn for him. Many of the town wits had great fun with Silas Digger's name, for that was what he did. He dug graves in a little cemetery on the edge of town. Silas was a good grave digger. The walls of the graves he dug were straight, and they never caved in while the funerals were going on. That's why the cemetery people had hired him and not old Lou Higgins, the other applicant for the job. Silas was careful with his grave, but he was even more careful with his bed. Silas had worked in the graveyard so long, he wanted his bed to be more soft and comfortable than those many coffins he helped lower into the ground. So board by board, piece by piece, he built his bed, using only the finest of mahogany. Yes, heavy mahogany. It cost Silas the wages of many a grave digging just for the wood alone. But it was worth it. And it took Silas a long, long time to make his bed. He measured the boards of the foot and those of the head. They were the same length. He laid them across the frame of the bed and then joined them perfectly. completely covering the frame. The sideboards were built up high, so that when he was lying in the bed, he couldn't see out. Oh, now you're beginning to see, aren't you? Yes. Silas Digger's mahogany bed was to be a coffin. Silas was badly puzzled for a while. How could he fix his bed so that the foot and headboard would close down over him when he died? Then he worked it out. With his dying movement, he would touch a little spring, and foot and headboard would close down over him, and he would be in his coffin. But what about a grave big enough to hold the coffin? He must talk to the graveyard people on the morrow. Silas bought two lots side by side in the graveyard. And when he wasn't busy digging other people's graves, he worked carefully on his own. Yes, he was digging his own grave. Finally, it was done. And now all there was to do was to die. Yes, die in his own bed, and with his dying movement, turn it into his coffin. When they saw the bed folded over him, they would know. And when they started to dig in his two graveyard lots, they would find everything in readiness. For he had just laid a few thin boards over the open grave and covered them with dirt. But Silas didn't die. No, not yet. All these years, old Lou Higgins had hated Silas, hated him beyond reason. And all because Silas had gotten a job at the graveyard, and the cemetery people had told Lou that he should have the job if Silas ever wanted to quit. Lou decided finally that there was only one way to make Silas give up that job. Silas would have to die. And Lou would see to it that he did. Snooping continually in the graveyard, old Lou found out that Silas owned two lots and had already dug his own grave. Yes, and it was covered with only a few thin boards and a little dirt. Ah, he had an idea. Yes, Lou had an idea. He smiled as he thought about it. Silas was lonely. So he made friends with the wind that blew in the graveyard. That's why it mourned for him the night he died. Yes, the wind was his friend. And he told his friend about his coffin and his grave. But Silas Digger was getting very old. He was slow in his work. And it was long after dark. He was still lifting spade after spade of dirt from a pauper's grave. Hard work, yes, very hard. And his old bones ached. His skinny legs shivered in the cold and his feet clicked as he asked his friend the wind about the darkness. Finally, he was through. And he slowly started home when he decided he would walk by his own grave. In the darkness, his friend the wind, in a playful mood, blew just a speck of dirt in his already watery eyes. He blinked and began to chide the wind for its prank. And then he heard old Lou's voice.
Silas, over here. Help me. Help me.
Silas was startled at that voice. What was Lou doing here in the graveyard? What could be the matter with him? Silas started toward that voice. And before he knew it, he walked out onto his own grave. The thin board gave way, and with a shriek, down he fell. When the cemetery people found him, he was quite dead. And his right hand was stretched out above his head, reaching for something. And there was a horrible look of determination upon his face, so horrible. The graveyard people turned away. Standing there with them was old Lou Higgins. Yes, the job was his now, and the first thing he had to do was to bury old Silas Digger. When he tried to put Silas into a little cheap pine coffin, he wouldn't fit. His outstretched hand made him too long. So Lou decided to bury Silas by standing him up in a corner of his grave and covering him with dirt. When old Lou was finished, Silas's fingers were just under the top layer of dirt on the grave. That night, about 2 hours after sundown, the wind began to blow. One little whirlpool of wind seemed more fierce than the rest, and it hovered a long while over a certain section of the graveyard. But no one knew that it was cleaning away the dirt from Silas Digger's body. No. No one knew but the wind. Old Lou Higgins had come to Silas Digger's house to live. He marveled at the bed. It was so beautiful, so soft, so peaceful. Not at all in keeping with any of the other furniture. He wondered about it, the rich mahogany panel, the deep sideboard. No, he wouldn't roll out of that bed. But then it was getting late and he had work to do tomorrow. It was going to be nice to sleep in such a splendid, comfortable bed. Yes, such a splendid bed. The covers were warm under old Lou's skin. Nice and warm. The wind outside was cold. It sounded angry as it swirled around the corners of the house. Then of a sudden it was quiet. There came a deadness of sound so complete that Lou could hear his own heart beating wildly. And his withered breast. Paralyzing chill came over him. Icy fingers of fear searched through his brain. What was that? Sounded like the front door. There must be a plank of the wind. No. Then it was again. It was the door. It was coming open. He could feel the wind as it surged through. Anxious to get inside. After the wind whirled around the lonely house, it moaned in anger. It heard something, something on and on. And again the voice of the wind was quiet. There. The old man heard them. Those were footsteps. Slow, heavy footsteps. They scraped across the floor. Then after the log. Then came the steps. Then a clunk. Now the steps came closer. A long, sickening scrape and a heavy clunk. Something was coming to his bedroom door. Now no sound at all. The unearthly stillness that he could actually feel. His heart was pounding wildly, choking his throat. He couldn't breathe. He couldn't see. He could only wait, wait and listen, his eyes straining out into the darkness. There was a sound. The doorknob was turning. Now the cat slid back in the lock. The old door squeaked slowly. Then came the wind. It squeezed through the tiny crack and rushed into the room. Old Lou could feel it angrily brush across his burning face. Now the door burst full wide with the angry wind to get in. And again, there came that silence. The wind was waiting. Old Lou Higgins, too, was waiting. Well, there was nothing else but wait. He was conscious only that his pounding heart was choking back his scream. There it was again. Closer. The revolting scrape. Then the heavy clunk. Another scraping sound. Closer now. Then the clump. The old man could see a form in the darkness. Black as the box. The blackest of the room. Something heavy was trying to climb over the sideboards of the bed. There he felt it. It was cold and stiff and very awkward. He could see it now. Ghastly white. Cheek with dirt. One arm above its head. Was the corpse of Silas Digger. He found his voice as Silas fell across him. He screamed into the blackness. He screamed again and again as the dead body rolled across him. And then there was only the wind. The sigh, a deep, long sigh, though it was a final breath released after the job was done. For as the wind rushed out of the room, the head and the foot of the bed slipped quietly together, leaving Silas Digger safe in his mahogany coffin. Safe. With company, too. Yes. With company.
You Oh, you do? And let me tell you one that's even funnier. Yes. Let me tell you the sinister tale of the strange bequest. Yes!
It is almost midnight. Time for the voice of the Black Chapel to recede into the void from whence it came. Each Friday evening, at a quarter of an hour before midnight, we come to this remote place, the Black Chapel, and listen to the hooded figure who sits at the keyboard of the ruined old organ, gibbering his fantastic tales as his talon hands grasp the cracked key. Listen next Friday evening for the sinister tale of the strange bequest. This is the Columbia Broadcast.
Going to do it for this episode of The Horror. I hope you enjoyed the shows today. Want to find more from The Haunting Hour? Just visit relicradio.com, search for that. You'll also find all the other shows there, links to past episodes, and links to our forum, Facebook page, Shoutcast Stream, even more old time radio, and our donate button if you'd like to help support it all. I certainly appreciate it if you're able to help out. Thank you very much to those who have, and thank you for joining me today. Be back Wednesday with another episode of The Horror.